Hello, I'm Father Charles Connor. Welcome to our series on the saint for the third millennium, Thérèse of Lisieux, as we meditate on Thérèse and suffering. Please stay with us.
Welcome to Saint for the Third Millennium, Saint Thérèse of Lisieux. In this series, Father Charles Connor presents the life, spiritual direction, and relevance of Saint Thérèse of Lisieux for today's Catholic and for the Church in all generations. Here now is Father Charles Connor.
Suffering is something which belongs to the realm of ultimate mysteries. Philosophers and poets, theologians and saints, men and women from the dawn of history, have been faced with the question of suffering. It raises not only the question of how to cope with evil, but also, and more fundamentally, how a good and powerful and loving God could permit evil. People have wrestled with this question almost from the beginning of time. Now, suffering as we know it can come about from sickness, from our material circumstances. It is something that may be physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual. We may speak of individual suffering, or we may speak of communitarian suffering. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, there have been many, many attempts to find, not necessarily solutions to the problem of suffering and evil, but at least ways of seeing suffering as something which is not devoid of meaning. In point of fact, it is something that is full of meaning. And it has been the approach of both Judaism and Christianity to find this fullness of meaning that can be taken from the sufferings that come to us in this life. The book of Genesis, for example, in the Old Testament, oftentimes viewed suffering as a punishment for one's sins. The Psalms and the wisdom literature, also found in the Old Testament, seem to indicate that the good prosper while the evil suffer. But if you read the book of Job, which is also in the Old Testament, some people see a contradiction between Job on the one hand and Psalms and wisdom literature on the other. Because in the book of Job, what do we find? We find Job, the basically good man, who is confronted with suffering in the midst of his life. And the question is raised, why? Then we come into the New Testament, to the letter to the Hebrews, and we see that that letter saw suffering as God's discipline, which yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness and healing. The peaceful fruit of righteousness and healing. Our blessed Lord suffered out of love, as we know, offering himself as a victim for the redemption of the world on the altar of the cross. And when he did, he really brought to completion the whole school of spirituality that one finds in the songs of the suffering servant of the Old Testament. Therefore, the most profound human response to suffering in the New Testament is to see the possibility of being united to Christ in love through carrying the cross. United to Christ in love through carrying the cross. Taking up our cross and following him. That is not simply an answer to the problem of suffering and evil. That is showing us the joy of suffering, the fulfillment of suffering, and the real, real purpose of suffering in all of our lives, no matter what form or what shape suffering may take. Now, what about suffering in the life of Thérèse of Lisieux? What can we learn from her? We can learn a great deal, as we learn in all of the various topics that we have been considering in this series so far that she teaches us so well. The word trial is found 173 times in her writings. And the word suffer or suffering is found 228 times in her writing. Almost half of the instances where we find it are contained in her letters. Letters to her priest brothers, letters to sisters in the community, letters to friends. She kept up a voluminous correspondence, and the question, or the words rather, trial, suffering, to suffer, are repeated over and over again. She also spoke very frequently of the joy of suffering. And in a letter that she wrote shortly before her death, she stated, "I have a great desire to suffer." Not many of us could make that as a legitimate statement, but she could, because of the extraordinary graces given her and the extraordinary spirituality she developed as a result of cooperating with the graces given to her. In 1895, as she began her magnificent autobiography, The Story of a Soul, she wrote this: "I find myself at a period of my life when I can cast a glance upon the past. My soul has matured in the crucible of exterior and interior trials. And now, like a flower strengthened by the storm, I can raise my head." The enormous insight that she has in this magnificent prose writing of hers in her autobiography. Well, Saint Therese knew suffering very well. She knew it in three ways. She knew it psychologically, she knew it spiritually, and she knew it physically. In this particular episode, we want to look at her psychological suffering and her spiritual suffering. And in our next program, we shall consider in greater detail her physical suffering. First of all, now her psychological suffering. There were many component parts to the psychological suffering of this young woman. She was born, as we have mentioned a number of times, on the 2nd of January, 1873, in Alençon, in Normandy. Very shortly after her birth, because of her mother's physical inability, she was sent to be nursed by Rose Tellet, who had nursed two other of the Martin children. There's a certain psychological suffering in her being deprived of being nursed by her own mother, a very definite psychological suffering. Then at 4.5 years of age, she lost her mother. Mother died of a serious cancer. She can still remember being brought up to her mother's bed, as we mentioned before, and kissing the mother goodbye. You can still see the bed where her mother died in the home in Alençon where the Martin family lived. Then at the age of 9, her sister Pauline, who really took over as her mother after her mother's death, Pauline entered the Carmel at Lisieux. Thérèse was to write years later the impact that Pauline's entry into Carmel had on her. "In one instance, I understood what life was. Until then, I had never seen it so. But it appeared to me in all its reality, and I saw it was nothing but a continual suffering and separation. I shed bitter tears because I did not yet understand the joy of sacrifice." When she discovered ultimately the joy of sacrifice, she would no longer shed the bitter tears. The joy of suffering, the joy of sacrifice was precisely that to her, a genuine and a very, very legitimate earthly joy. We don't think of suffering and sacrifice as a legitimate earthly joy. But that is precisely what it is if we can develop our spirituality to that point. And each and every one of us have the capacity to develop our spirituality to that point, to see suffering and to see sacrifice as a very legitimate earthly joy. Well, this separation from Pauline, Mother Agnes, as she was known, Mother Agnes of Jesus, the separation from Pauline undoubtedly was at least a partial cause of a very serious illness, which we have talked about briefly before in this series. It was an illness that lasted for some 5 months until her life was saved, really, by the Blessed Virgin Mary, the smile of the Virgin. This occurred in 1883. During her illness, she was extremely sensitive. She suffered from insomnia, lack of ability to sleep. She suffered from weakness, from rashes which would break out. She suffered from fevers. And she even suffered from some failure of her motor nerves, to the extent that at times she would have to be helped to walk, to move around at all. She did not seem to be able to do it on her own power. Someone else had to help her. There would be some, of course, who would say that this entire illness that she experienced was psychosomatic. Thérèse never thought it was psychosomatic. She always thought it was the work of the devil. And that was the opinion of the entire Martin family, that her illness was indeed the work of the devil. So we see now that she's had a number of instances at a very, very young age of psychological suffering. She came to yet a new and an even more profound dimension of psychological suffering with her father's final illness and death. We've spoken often in this series of Louis Martin, the saint's father, how he and his wife Zélie were such a remarkable couple, and how their cause is being seriously studied for sainthood in these early years of the 21st century. You could visit their graves directly behind the great basilica in Lisieux that was erected, by the way, with contributions from Thérèse's admirers all over the world. There on a hill behind that magnificent basilica overlooking the town of Lisieux are the graves of Louis and Zélie Martin. Well, when Thérèse was 14 years of age, Louis Martin suffered his first paralysis. It was not a debilitating one, but it was one that certainly had some significance about it. On the 9th of April, 1888, as we know so well, Thérèse entered the Carmel of Lisieux. Just a few weeks later, on the 23rd of May, her older sister Marie took the veil. She had been in for some time. On the 15th of June, some 2 months after Thérèse entered, Céline, who was the last of the Martin sisters still living at home at Les Buissonnets with her father, announced to her father that she, too, would like to enter the Carmel and join her sisters, Thérèse and Marie and Pauline. And finally, Léonie, that very, very troubled soul, who had been in the convent 3 times, made her final decision to enter the visitation order at Cayenne. It seemed with these various decisions that the Martin sisters were well-placed, well-taken care of in life. Louis Martin then began to wander. He left Lisieux, wandered aimlessly for some 4 days. No one knew where he was until he was finally discovered and brought back. He had to be institutionalized for quite some time in a hospital in Cayenne. And finally, he came home. Céline, who had been living with him, had to postpone her plans to enter Carmel. Léonie had to postpone her plans to enter the visitation order, and the two of them began to take care of their father, who was now deeply, deeply suffering from mental illness. They care for him not at Le Buissonnet, but rather at another residence in Lisieux. And Thérèse was able to see him only one more time, Thérèse and all of her sisters, Marie, Pauline, the three of them who were in Carmel. He made one final visit to the parlor, and he was in very, very bad shape. He knew where he was, but he was not able to express his thoughts with any great ability. What an amazing torture, psychological torture, it had to have been for that young nun the last time she saw her father. She thought that she might see him one more time the day she herself took the veil. They were planning to bring him to the chapel to witness the ceremony. But at the last minute, his brother-in-law, Isidore Guérin, decided against the idea, very rightly fearing that if he subjected his brother-in-law to an emotion that might be very, very overpowering, he could easily do him much more harm than good. And so on the day before Thérèse took the veil, she wrote a letter to Céline, who was still out in the world taking care of their father. And this is what Thérèse wrote. "You know how intensely I long to see our dearest father this morning. Oh, well, now I see clearly that it is the good God's will that he should not be here. He allowed it simply to try our love. Jesus wants me to be an orphan. He wants me to be alone with him alone. Alone with him alone. That he may be united with me more intimately. And also he wants to give me in the homeland the utterly legitimate joys he has refused me in the land of exile." She's living now on earth in the land of exile. She'll get the real joys coming to her in the homeland of heaven. And she continues to Céline, "Today's trial is an affliction difficult to understand. One sees a joy offered. It is possible, natural. We stretch out our hand, and we cannot seize the consolation we so long for. But Céline, how mysterious it all is. We no longer have a shelter here on this earth. Let us accept then with a good heart the thorn Jesus holds out to us. Tomorrow's feast will be a feast of tears for us." That is her taking the veil. "It will be a feast of tears for us. But I feel that Jesus will be so consoled." That is a beautiful acceptance, is it not, of great psychological suffering. So by this time in her life, she had truly embraced not simply psychological suffering, but the joy of psychological suffering. She writes further to Céline on another occasion, "Sanctity does not consist in saying beautiful things. It does not even consist in thinking them or in feeling them. It consists in suffering and suffering everything. Sanctity, we must conquer it at the point of the sword. We must suffer. We must agonize. A day will come when the shadows will disappear." So that was psychological suffering in her life. And she handled it extremely well, to say the very, very least. Then there is the matter of spiritual suffering in her life. And she knew that just as intimately as she would know psychological suffering. From May of 1885 until October of 1886, she suffered, as we have previously mentioned, very intensely from scrupulosity. Now, what do we understand by scrupulosity? What is it? Well, for most people, scrupulosity is a form of anxiety, and it's marked by an inability to make balanced, rational, objective judgments about moral issues. Generally, for you and for me, that would be the constituent element of scrupulosity. But not for her. Her scrupulosity was of a very, very different sort. In her case, it centered on offending God. Far, far more than being scared that every action she committed was a sin. You see, her love of God was so intense that the very real fear that would build up in her was the fear she would experience about offending him whom she loved so very, very much. Wasn't punishment that worried her? Punishment due to sin. It was the breaking of the love relationship that she had worked so hard to achieve over so many years. Her sister Marie had been a spiritual confidant to her, and she, of course, tried to explain this to Marie, and she did to a very great extent. But she always attributed the easing of this scrupulosity, the fact that it left her eventually in 1886, to the intercession of her four siblings, the little brothers and sisters, who we've mentioned a few times now, buried in the cemetery at Lisieux, and to her closeness and union and oneness with them in the communion of saints. They were the ones who, through their prayers, lifted her out of the spiritual suffering of scrupulosity. But there was another form of spiritual suffering that entered her life, and she really saw it when she entered what she described as her desert, namely Carmel, on the 9th of April, 1888. She's incredibly happy that day. The sisters are there to welcome her. But behind them, there's another invisible presence who greets her. And that presence is Jesus on the cross. Listen to what she writes. "Yes, suffering opened wide its arms to me, and I threw myself into them with love. When one wishes to attain a goal, one must use the means. Jesus made me understand that it was through suffering that he wanted to give me souls, and my attraction for suffering grew in proportion to its increase. This was my way for 5 years. Exteriorly, nothing revealed my suffering, which was all the more painful, since I alone was aware of it." Now, what did this long period of suffering, spiritual suffering, consist of in the Carmel? Well, it did not consist of taking on loads of severe penances and inflicting herself with all kinds of unrealistic penances. That was tried by certain members of the Carmel, and very often those good sisters, wonderful in their intention, did ultimately fail in their efforts because many of the penances they imposed upon themselves were too severe. Father Conrad de Meister, a Belgian Carmelite who has written very extensively and is one of the great Therese scholars of the world, recently wrote a book with Empty Hands, and he describes the spiritual suffering of Therese in the cloister. This is what Father de Meister wrote. "The greater source of suffering Therese mentioned was certainly a matter of human relationships. It is not always easy to live constantly with others in such close confinement. On the contrary, rubbing elbows with the same people and looking at the same faces day after day throughout a lifetime is scarcely enjoyable. To select only one of the many possible instances, consider how very difficult Therese found the experience of trying to confide in her mistress of novices, Sister Marie of the Angels. Although Sister Marie was a sweet-natured and always ready to offer good advice, Therese could not share the deepest aspirations of her soul with her, however hard she may have tried. Then there was Sister Martha, one of Therese's novices, who was far from accommodating to begin with, and who seemed to enjoy opposing Therese at every turn. Her two sisters, Pauline and Marie, represented a trial of a different kind. Therese loved them dearly, but neither wanted nor maintained a family relationship with her. And above all others, there was Mother Marie de Gonzague, who, except for the interruption of 3 years, was Therese's prioress throughout her religious life. Mother Marie could be really charming, So charming, indeed, that Therese almost became attached to her. But the prioress was generally temperamental and touchy, and readily suspicious of the, as Father De Meister calls them, the Martin clan. The Martin clan. Especially of the highly gifted Pauline, Sister Agnes, whose influence was beginning to be felt in the community. Therefore, says Conrad De Meister, the 5 years of suffering Therese referred to coincided exactly with her first 5 years under Mother Marie de Gonzague's priorship. Our mother prioress, frequently ill, had little time to spend with me. I know she loved me very much, Therese wrote, and said everything good about me that was possible, but nevertheless, God permitted that she was very, very severe without her being aware of it. And one day, Therese admitted to another sister, I can assure you that I had many struggles, and there was not one day without suffering. Not one. So she had much spiritual suffering in her life, as well as psychological suffering. And finally, the last type of spiritual suffering she would have would be her great darkness of soul, the last year and a half. She combined that with physical suffering. And it is that story of the combination of the physical and the spiritual that we shall concentrate on in our next program.
Join us next week at this time for Saint for the Third Millennium, Saint Therese of Lisieux, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Jesus Christ, Son of the Father, send now your Spirit over the earth. Let the Holy Spirit live in the hearts of all nations, that they may be preserved from degeneration, disaster, and war. May the Lady of all nations, who once was Mary, be our advocate. Amen.